With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer, joining us from Phoenix. He was in attendance for last night's game between the Clippers and the Suns. What's your big takeaway from last night there, Chris?
You know, just the resiliency of the Clippers. I mean, we've seen it throughout these playoffs, going down 2-0 in both the first and second round. But, you know, this comeback and win in this game was maybe even more impressive to me. I mean, they learned about the injury and, well, the extent of the injury to Zubac at the morning shoot-around. And to already down, you know, Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard, and now being down your best big man, going up against a big physical team with a guy like DeAndre Ayton, to still be able to not only rally and win, but they came out fast, Dan. I mean, they were up 20-5 early in this game. They had multiple opportunities in the second half to fold. You know, the Clippers have this history of not showing up in big moments. That history, regardless of what happens in this series, I think has been largely erased because of the performance of this team.
But you try to handicap this series. I wasn't surprised, said I wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers won last night, because why not? Now they go back home where you would expect the Clippers to win. So what do you expect here in game six?
I have no idea. You know, there's an argument to be made that, you know, this was kind of the Clippers shooting their shot here. This was everything they had left in the tank. I mean, Paul George, look at the minutes Paul George has played in this postseason. I think it's like 735, which is like 130 more than anybody else in these playoffs. I mean, sitting in the interview room after the game, I mean, he looked exhausted. Marcus Morris, who has battled a knee injury of his own, had to go 41 minutes largely against DeAndre Ayton. He looked exhausted. I mean, there's only so many, you know, proverbial bullets they have left in the chamber. And, you know, going home, I'm sure they'll get a bounce off that home crowd. And, you know, one thing these Clippers players said last night to a man was that, you know, they knew they were down 3-1, but, you know, they looked at it like a couple of breaks here or there, the valley oop, you know, better offense in game four. They could have been up 3-1 in this series. So they've got a little bit of confidence, but at some point, all these injuries start to take their toll. And if Zubac can't go in this game six, I just have a hard time seeing Ayton struggle as much as he did and the Suns play as poorly defensively as they did.
What is Kawhi Leonard's status?
I wouldn't expect to see him in these playoffs.
No matter, even if it goes game seven?
I don't believe it. Okay. I have not heard any indications. And Kawhi, as we all know, plays everything kind of close to the chest. But, you know, you get kind of, you talk to Clippers personnel, you know, whether it's on site or, you know, via text message, you just don't get positive indications that Kawhi is coming back. I don't know the full extent of that injury, if it is something that may require surgery down the line, but there are no indications yet that Kawhi is, you know, a return is imminent.
But is this an injury that is going to stay with him, or a condition that is going to stay with him the rest of his career?
Well, it's hard to say with this injury specifically. Now, he has had that knee problem that has needed to be load managed since his days at San Antonio. I would say that particular version of the injury is going to be with him for his entire career. I mean, Kawhi, I forget how old he is, right around 30 at this point. But so I don't expect that to change anytime soon. So with the course of an 82-game season, we're going to see Kawhi at most play 60, 65 games for the rest of his career. This injury felt a little bit different. This was one of those, you know, kind of injuries in the moment that we may find out later that it was an ACL injury that requires some type of surgery. But there's the day of Kawhi Leonard, Dan, playing 80 games in a season, those days are long since over.
Gosh, I don't remember those days. When's the last time he was ever close to that?
2012, maybe, yeah. 2013. Yeah. Like, you got to go back to the early San Antonio days before, you know, that injury happened that cost him almost a full season, that last full season with the Spurs. So, look, it's not the end of the world. I mean, Toronto won a championship with Kawhi, you know, being load managed throughout. I think the Clippers, you know, you can argue if Kawhi Leonard was healthy, you know, they'd be the favorites to win the championship this year. There's a pathway for them to win, or any team that has Kawhi Leonard to win with him being load managed. It's just kind of a fact of life for him going forward.
Have we been unfair? We, the media, been unfair to Paul George in our expectation level?
I don't know. I think social media probably has, but social media is unfair to everybody. Social media, mostly boxing fans, hate me. Like, so, like, I mean, it's like, it is kind of what it is when it comes to critiques. Now, I'm sure if Paul George could hop in the time machine, he would go back and not say what he said in that clip you played. Like, he would not call himself Playoff P. Like, that has kind of stuck to him like white on rice there. And it ratcheted up the level of expectation. If you call yourself Playoff P, and then you subsequently have back-to-back early playoff exits in Oklahoma City, you blow a 3-1 lead with the Clippers, that is going to be something you are tagged with for the rest of his career. But when you're a superstar and you don't win championships, I mean, LeBron James gets criticized still. He's won multiple championships. That just kind of comes with the territory when it comes to being a player of that status.
Yeah, PG-13, we were okay with. Like, that was a nice, cute nickname, you know, but Playoff P, you know.
Has anybody that's given themselves a nickname ever felt good about it afterwards? I'm struggling to think off the top of my head who else has given themselves nicknames. But usually, like, Shaq gave Paul Pierce the truth, and that stuck, and that worked well for Paul Pierce over his career. If somebody gives you a nickname, it's great, because even if it doesn't even if you don't live up to it, you didn't give it to yourself. Like, it wasn't you that's called yourself that. When you call yourself Playoff P, you put a target on your back if you don't play like someone that lives up to those expectations.
Well, Dion called himself Primetime.
But lived up to it.
Lived up to it.
Yeah. Like, if you can call yourself Primetime.
You know what?
If you call yourself the greatest of all time. Like, yeah. And certainly is in the discussion for that as a favorite to be called that. I mean, if somebody calls yourself MVP, if that's what he did, and he won multiple MVPs, you lived up to it. But if you're Playoff P and you struggle, look, I do think this is the best postseason he's had since his Indiana days. You know, maybe better because of he's put in a position without a Danny Granger or a David West that are around him. I mean, look, he was shooting 35% going into that game five. And you look at the first half and he was pretty passive, and you could see kind of the critics start to warm up. And I think, even I wasn't listening to it, but I had seen tweets about the broadcast were criticizing Paul George for that first half. And then to come out in the third quarter, just blow the doors off, 20 points. They get 3 3-pointers in that period. I mean, that was a Playoff P level performance for Paul George.
Talking to Chris Mannix, the Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. Why do boxing fans hate you?
They think my scorecards suck. I do that for DAZN. And boxing's polarizing, though. Everybody thinks they know exactly what they're talking about. It's probably one of the worst sports for that.
Okay. I just wanted
it's there.
To, yeah.
Watch a big fight. Watch a big fight. Monitor on social media. It's interesting.
You know I don't do social media.
That's true. Paulie does, though, so he can text you.
By the way, social media yesterday with Scottie Pippen. Were you monitoring social media?
I was. I saw McLovin's tweets first and foremost, and then I saw the clip. I mean, I'll be the umpteenth person to tell you, tremendous interview with Scottie. I mean, I thought you did everything you could to get to the root of the racism charge, which is the big one that's out there. I didn't think he had a single answer that made any sense. So I had people texting me afterwards, NBA people that were just, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but like, does Scottie need some help, you know, after this? You know, what's going through his mind right now that he would sit there and make a racism charge? I mean, look, he's been upset about the Tony Kukoc play for decades now. Like, that's never going to change, despite the fact that Kukoc made the shot. Like, he hit the shot and helped the Bulls advance. Scottie's still upset about it, but there's no evidence that Phil Jackson is a racist in any way, shape, or form. Players that have played for him have never charged him with that before. That's an ugly thing to say unless you have specific examples to back it up. And, you know, I watched that interview a couple of times. He doesn't seem to have one single example to back it up. I mean, and there was a lot of weird things, like Michael Jordan, you know, controlling the cameras. Like, now we're getting into tinfoil hat conspiracy where he's, you know, he's telling Steve Curry he's going to pass him the ball because the camera that he controls is watching and he's thinking about his documentary 20 years later. There's just a lot of dot connecting that Scottie was doing in that moment that didn't make a lot of sense.
The Damian Lillard situation in Portland. What is the situation? Because I'm not sure if he wants out. Is this passive aggressive? Is there something going on with what his future is going to be in Portland?
Well, Chauncey Billups gets introduced as the next head coach today. And my understanding is they're going to all try to get into a room and figure out if this is salvageable with Damian Lillard. I grow more and more skeptical by the day, Dan, that it is. You know, I said this on my podcast this morning, but like, Damian Lillard is like the guy breaking up with the girlfriend for the first time. Like, he wants to break up with her, but he doesn't know how to. So he's going about it in kind of a ham-handed type of way. And that's what Dame's been doing. And it's not just the last couple of days. You go back to the immediate aftermath of the loss to the Nuggets. And he had this cryptic tweet that was a cryptic Instagram post that was out there about how many times do I have to keep doing this with the same result. He then somewhat bizarrely goes out there and throws his support behind Jason Kidd, of all people, to be the head coach of the Trailblazers. And there have been more, obviously, social media posts in the last couple of days as well. Look, I don't think this is about the coach. I don't think it's about Blazers fans criticizing him for his involvement in the coaching search. I think, plain and simple, Damian Lillard, at 31 years old, is looking at the Trail Blazers roster and saying, I can't win. And I can't argue with him with that. I mean, they got beat by a Denver Nuggets team without its second best player that subsequently went out and got absolutely smoked by the Phoenix Suns in four games. That loss has not aged well for the Trail Blazers. So I think what it comes down to for Lillard, as loyal as he's been to Portland, is that he wants to win as he in the final prime years of his career. And this is kind of his sort of somewhat clumsy way of going out and forcing that. The irony of all this, Dan, is that I think a Damian Lillard trade is the best thing for both sides. Lillard can find his way to a new situation, give himself a chance to win. And Portland, which has really no chance to win at the highest level with Damian Lillard the next couple of years, can recoup one of, if not the biggest trade haul in recent NBA history. I mean, Lillard has that type of value on the open market. So this is kind of it's an awkward situation right now, but in the next few weeks, even maybe months, if Damian Lillard is traded, that could wind up being the best thing for both sides.
Okay, but the most likely destination, and do not say the New York Knicks.
No, I mean, and by the way, please, Lakers fans, stop like sending your trade machine things out that include like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as the centerpiece of a deal. Like that's unless you're dealing Anthony Davis, you're probably not getting Damian Lillard. Two things to remember with Davis, with Lillard, you're going to work with him on a trade. You're not just going to dump him like on Oklahoma City or something like that, where he can play the final few years of his contract out. You're going to work with him on where he wants to go, and you're going to have to find a situation where he can win. That means going to a team with at least one second star that's on it. And then you start to look at the return you get. Like, you're not dealing Damian Lillard for Bradley Beal, because Bradley Beal, while being 28 years old and still a great player, has 1 year left in his contract that is not going to stay in Portland beyond one season. So you're looking for kind of what, say, Oklahoma City got, where they got a blue chip young player in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a haul of draft picks. Using those as the early parameters, I would say there are two teams right off the bat that stand out. One is Philadelphia, because Ben Simmons is still out there and the Sixers still have their draft capital over the next few years. Simmons is signed through 2025. And as flawed as he is, he's still a perennial all-star at 24 years old, who, if he ever fixes his shot, has the potential to be great. The other, it's Boston. I can't believe we're doing this once again, where the Celtics are in the mix for another superstar, but here we are. Boston has Jaylen Brown. He's 24 years old. He's an all-star for the first time. He gets better every single year. You can build a trade package around Jaylen Brown, a lot of the young players they have in Boston, and their cache of draft picks over the years as well. It's like we're very early in this process, and because Lillard is signed through 2025, you're probably going to have teams try to sneak in and find a deal that works. But when this started to pick up, those were the first two teams that I thought of that are also, by the way, in the Eastern Conference, where you don't have to deal with Damian Lillard for more than two times a season and never have to deal with him in the playoffs.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate your time as always, bud.
You got it, Dan.
That's Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddy, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So, listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's the U.S. Open champ. He's the number one rated golfer in the world. He's John Rahm joining us on the show. John, we want to play a game. Where is the U.S. Open trophy? Now, don't tell us yet, okay? Let's go around the room. Where do we think the U.S. Open trophy is at John's home in Scottsdale, if it's there? Todd, I'll start with you.
He's got a nice spot for it in the man cave on
okay.
the kind of big
TV. Oh, John's got a man cave already. All right. McLovin?
No, I've been where he is. There's baby stuff everywhere. It's in the garage.
Okay. All right. He does have a newborn. Seton O'Connor?
Say an office? Home office.
Home office. Paulie.
New baby hasn't mounted it yet. It's on the floor near his desk in his office.
I'm going to say it's still in the box. John, where is your U.S. Open trophy?
Well, before I say anything, my brother-in-law will not forgive me if I don't do this. So I got to say I'm 6'3", 245.
And you're wearing a dad bod t-shirt there.
Exactly. See, I had the bod. I got the dad part. Now officially I can wear it.
Okay. So
the trophy, it's actually on the living room. It's in a little mantle on top of the fireplace. It's the first thing you see when you walk in the house.
Well, that's pretty good. Now, did you have to negotiate that with the wife of... I'm going to put it right out there on display. Or do you want somebody to ask for it so they can see it, John?
No, it's actually the only trophy I have outside the office. So everything else, it's in the office. Nothing on the man cave, which is really more like a practice area at the house, is the only one I have outside.
Would the baby fit in the trophy? If you wanted to bathe the baby.
I tried. He does not fit. He's too old. Not too old. He's too big. I think if it's a newborn, it would fit. But so when the top of the trophy screws on,
yeah,
it's got this two little things that come out and could actually hurt the baby a little bit. So I didn't try for too long.
Yeah. Did you drink out of it?
Yes.
What did you drink out of it?
Orange juice.
Oh, it was orange. Of course you did. Okay. All right.
That's what I'll say in public.
Do you feel different being the number one player? Being the number one player in the world or the U.S. Open champ, which affects how you feel as a golfer more?
Well, I had gotten to number one in the world before, and I didn't realize until after I won, because I think Dustin had to finish, I don't know, 19th or worse or something like that. But winning your first major, that's what makes a difference. That's a bit of a sense of relief in me.
Relief?
A little bit.
Because when you're number one, then they go, how many majors do you have? Or when are you going to win a major? And there are guys who haven't won majors who are great golfers in history.
Yeah, there you go. In golf, when you've played good for a little bit, you get put on that best player to never win a major list very, very quick. And to a 26, I've gone out of that. It was a bit of a relief.
But is it more mental or physical, the reason why you won the U.S. Open?
Mental, 100% mental.
Like, what kind of grind was that? It didn't look like it was fun, John.
You know, when you're playing good, it's a lot more fun than when you're struggling. Yeah. I had, because on Saturday and Sunday, I played with two guys. I played with Bob on Saturday and Matthew Wolf on Sunday, and they both struggled. So I might be the bad luck charm over here. and it just did not look fun while I was playing okay. And it's a mental stress. Every single shot you hit in a US Open, you're stressing, especially in a course like Torrey Pines. So it's a mental grind that, you know, undoubtedly is going to actually get a little bit of tax on your body as well.
But also, you know, in a course like that, in a tournament like that, par is your friend. Mm-hmm. But normally you're aggressive and you're trying to get birdies. Like, how's the mindset where you go, hey, I'll take a four and I'll walk away from here?
A lot of times, you know, you might have let's say a doable birdie putt. You might have, you know, somewhere around 10 feet or inside 15 feet where you want to make it, but you got to understand that, hey, I made a four, let's move on, no matter how it happens, right? And sometimes you're going to make a couple par putts that feel like they're birdies or eagles, and other times, you know, even a bogey putt. I mean, it's happened to all of us where you make one good putt and, you know, you're saving that one shot, right? The key is not giving too many away. You're limited on the amount of birdies you're going to be able to make.
What's the craziest thing you ever thought of when you're standing over a putt?
Craziest thing?
Yeah. Have you ever thought like, hey, I'm thinking about dinner, I'm thinking about...
No.
Like, have you ever lost concentration over a putt?
I sometimes, when I'm playing, you know, when you're in a little bit of a zone, I just have a song in my head. And for whatever reason, I'll still be focused on what I'm doing, but that song will be played in my head.
And what's the song?
It all depends. Could be anything. Honestly, being a dad now, a lot of times it's Baby Shark.
How good are you at diaper changing?
I'm okay. I'm pretty good. I've been able to avoid most of the disasters. both me and my wife, Kelly, never spent any time around babies, right? So early on, we had a couple of surprises. Especially when you have a boy, you have a couple of other things to be, you know, taking care of.
Yeah, you could get it in the eye.
It's hit the curtains before.
What was a stronger emotion, the excitement of winning your first major or when you had to withdraw from the Memorial?
Oh, the excitement of winning my first major. Withdrawing from the Memorial, I think, was less of a bother when it comes to golf than what most people think. Just because, you know, I tested positive for COVID, so my attention was automatically on my family. My wife has asthma, her mom has asthma, so I was really worried about that and our little boy. So I wasn't that worried about golf. I never really felt any resentment in that sense. All I chose to remember is, you know, I played unbelievable golf for 3 days. Short of the guys out there playing really good, I feel like, not that I'm officially the champion, but I would have had a good shot. So, you know, we'll remember that. And I was just making sure I was doing everything properly to keep him healthy and not spread anything in our family. And so when that's your priority, golf was absolutely secondary.
I was mad for you, John, the way you were informed. Like, it just wasn't fair to you. They could do that privately. Did anybody ever apologize to you for that?
So the reasoning for that is because I had tested positive and people, I believe, on the broadcast knew or they were about to find out, they didn't want me to go ahead and shake anybody's hand on the crowd or interact with the crowd. Now, being on the COVID tracing list, I had really been like mindful about not doing any of that. And the only basically moment where I forgot was after finishing the third round. I had played so good that I completely forgot what I had been going through, and I shook my playing partner's hands. Now, both of them had COVID, so I feel like it was okay, but you know, they didn't want me to go in the crowd, and at first they didn't want me to go inside to sign my scorecard. So it was a bit of a confusing idea, and that's why they told me on the spot. Now, knowing that it's the second time they put me in a vulnerable spot on national TV on the same hole, on the same tournament,
oh boy.
Well, it felt a little bit, you know, almost more personal, but they did what they had to do, and yes, the people in charge did. They told me that it could have been handled better.
But also, you know, I'm listening to Faldo and Nance. They didn't know. And they ended their broadcast, and we saw the emotion. Like, I thought the worst. I thought something had happened in your family. And
yeah, I did react like it, I guess.
Yeah.
But at that point, I had played so good, and, you know, knowing that it was a possibility, the fact that I had to leave and just everything combined, the fact that my parents were coming in Monday right after the tournament, and I hadn't seen them in a while. I think a lot of emotions got mixed in there together. And it was just upsetting because you don't expect that to happen, right? I was the first one through all this to happen. And I mean, it is what it is. And I mean, my wife didn't even know. Very few people know. She thought something happened to my parents as well. So it's, yeah, I think in that sense is where things could have been handled better.
Go back to the U.S. Open, and Phil Mickelson's on the driving range. And I thought that was a cool moment that Phil was just hanging there, just with your family.
Yeah, he returned the favor. I've been fortunate to be able to stay a few times to watch him win. I did in Mexico and at the PGA. You know, he broke a pretty impressive record, and he came in and took care of Kelly. You know, Kelly was, to say a nervous wreck, the least, because he was stressing and holding the baby, and he was helping her out. I mean, they brought some chairs to the range. I don't even know where they got the chairs from, and he took care of her, and he did an amazing job. You know, that shows what a quality man he is.
What did you save from the final round?
What did I do? What?
What did you save? Like, do you save anything from the final round and keep it separate? Like your scorecard, you get that?
I don't know if I get that.
You don't get the scorecard?
I have no idea. I think the trophy's enough. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh. Well, yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking for something for you to donate to the man cave here, John. Like your socks or shoes or something.
My shoes, outfit, hat, glove. The USGA took it all for their museum. What I can give you is a yardage book I used that week.
I would love that.
Yeah, I do have that.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Concerns going to the British Open?
None. Not really. I mean, I'm not concerned about the tournament. I'm excited. You know, I'm going to a golf course where I played Lynx Golf for the first time. That was about 12 years ago. I think it was 2009. And, you know, when I got my start on the UK, so I would love to go back and as the latest champion and hopefully still as number one in the world. So, you know, I'm excited to go. Really, really, really eager.
Yeah, and you get to golf in a sweater. It's winter time over there, isn't there?
You never know.
I know.
Summer one day, it could be freezing the next day. But yeah, I mean, you do get to enjoy wearing a sweater, which living in Arizona is something you miss.
I played golf in Ireland in March, and it snowed.
You can get everything in one day. I've seen rain, sunshine, not snow, but I've seen hail, wind, no wind. I mean, the weather, it's about as unpredictable as it gets.
The strangest weather you ever played in?
Strangest?
Yeah. Toughest?
A couple of amateur events in Spain and severe hailstorms. And, you know, when it's amateur events, you don't have, you know, weather equipment, so you go out there and deal with it. I have seen the lightning strike almost on the golf course when we were junior players and all sorts of things. But as a pro, the craziest happened in Oakmont in 2016. We didn't even get to play in it, but the storm that went through because they got us off the golf course just early enough was about as harsh as I've seen.
Well, hopefully you'll get good weather when you go over there. And congrats again. I love the shirt. Congrats on being the number one player in the world. And more importantly, you know, you got a baby there, and there's nothing like that every single morning. Walk in and see his face smiling. Can't have a bad day, John.
That is true. You can't have a bad day. Thank you.
Thank you, bud. That's John Rahm, the U.S. Open champ and the number one player in the world. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it. Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mark Silverman is the co-host of Sylvie and Waddle, the very popular ESPN 1000 radio show in Chicago. And Sylvie joining us on the program. When did you realize that what you were going to talk about on Monday was going to change after the interview with Scottie Pippen?
Right after your interview was done. We obviously were on this. As you joked yesterday, Dan, this is a gift to Chicago Sports Radio. And so we thank you for that personally. Friday, we were all over it, too. And the joke, Waddle has always said to me, you know, he's the former Bear. He's lived here forever. So he's a Chicagoan, but he doesn't get what we get. For me as a sports fan. And then I covered the last three Bulls championships as a reporter, young reporter down the dial, that I always get worked up about Scottie. That a lot of the times I've defended Scottie. I have fought for years on ESPN 1000. About Scottie getting his due, that Scottie not being just a top 50 player, but being a top 30 player, Scottie being a revolutionary player. And then now all of a sudden I felt like a scorned lover. And it's really broken my heart regarding all the bitterness that he has shown. And your interview just took it to this whole new level that GQ couldn't go, especially with the way he was talking to you.
But he believes what he's saying, but nobody believes him.
Right, right. And it's kind of like a buddy, Dan. We all have him. We all know him, that he says, oh, this person in my life sucks. This person in my life is not loyal. This person in my life isn't good for business. Well, maybe if you've got all these people who are bad, maybe it's you. Maybe you need to look in the mirror. And I've always found it interesting. We know he hated Krause, hated Krause. They didn't love Jerry Reinsdorf as the owner, and he was the guy who signed the checks. But we always thought they had a bond with Michael and Scotty and Phil, and that they were loyal together, even if it was just with a common denominator of disliking management. But now Scotty thinks that Michael's selfish and that Phil was a racist. Who's left standing? And maybe it's Scotty that's the issue here. And I think it's sad. I really like, he wants to sell bourbon and he wants to sell books, but I just don't think that's a reason to go and ruin the relationships of one of the greatest teams of all time.
Yeah, I was just trying to understand the logic of all of this, and I couldn't help but go back to April, last April, Sylvie. And if that documentary doesn't come out, is Scottie Pippen saying what he's saying this week?
It's funny because we had a great relationship with Jason Hare, the director, and I know he reached out to Waddle yesterday. They knew each other from BC. Jason, the director, was a BC ball boy, so he knew Waddle when he was a player. And I think he felt a little guilty at the way Scotty came across. And my whole rationale has been the documentary didn't make Scotty look that way. Scotty made himself look that way, just like Scotty made himself look that way yesterday. There are so many great things in Scotty Pippen's career. And I think, unlike others from the 90s, Dan, where you see this new way of playing basketball, I think the appreciation has grown for Scotty through the years, that we realize, wow, this guy was the first. This guy is exactly the way the modern day basketball player was. But, you know, I think it's just an excuse going back to the documentary. And this whole notion that Michael commissioned it and Michael got the documentary he wanted. I'm a Michael fan. I covered Michael. I think after watching all the episodes, we come away saying, boy, Michael was kind of a bully. Michael could have been a big jerk. Michael, a lot of times, was in it for Michael. We still look at him highly, but I don't think that the documentary was a fluff piece to Michael Jordan.
What was your show like yesterday with local reaction?
You know, it's full phones. Everyone wants to talk about it. You know, we have a hot baseball in town. The Sox are good. The Cubs are good. We got Justin Fields, finally. Maybe you'll have me on to talk about a quarterback that's good finally in Chicago. But yeah, I mean, this is – and like I reached out to Wilbon yesterday because I think he feels like me. And he said, obviously, being in Phoenix, it doesn't resonate in Phoenix. But in Chicago, just like a year ago, Dan, when we're sitting in the pandemic – and we're rehashing arguments that are 22 years old or 25 years old. We're doing the same thing a year later in 2021. It's amazing and it's sad. I mean, again, like the 85 Bears, Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka hated each other. And now maybe we're finding out that one of the greatest all-time American sports teams all hated each other.
But you're messing with a brand. That's what Scotty's doing. You're messing with a scrapbook for people. And I think that's what probably bothers fans is, no, we choose to remember this team, these moments like this. Don't disrupt this. You know, now all of a sudden we're looking and, you know, Michael is orchestrating Steve Kerr's last second shot against Utah. And Phil wanted Tony in there because he's white to take the shot. And that's a lot. That's a lot to unpack.
It's a lot to unpack, and I couldn't believe, like, the Phil stuff, and they fought for Phil. All they did was fight for Phil, and now, 20-plus years later, you're coming out. But the Kerr stuff, Dan, the Kerr stuff, I don't understand how you orchestrate something. All that is game planning. You know what? Orchestrating a play, whether it's for the cameras or not, you orchestrated a way to clinch a championship by finding Steve Kerr for the open shot. So it wasn't about making Michael look good. It was about winning that fifth title at that time and setting Steve Kerr up for the best shot, whether or not, you know, he was playing to the cameras a little bit more. Look, we all know athletes. They even say it when they get mic'd up. Sometimes mic'd up athletes are a little more outgoing or will play to the cameras. Brady's done it. Russell Wilson's done it. Maybe he was playing it up a little bit more. But what did it lead to? It led to a championship clinching shot that wasn't his. And I don't know why Scotty could ever argue with that.
Did anybody have a problem with John Paxson taking a shot against the Phoenix Suns? I mean, I go back and I start to do inventory here. Like, wait, who took the last shot? Oh, John Paxson, he's white. I mean, crazy.
It's crazy. And Dan, there's like to the point about the documentary and whether it was orchestrated. There's a very famous moment from the Bulls championship 91 video, the first championship against the Lakers. I'm a nerd like this. I watched this video like 100 times in college. And Phil turns to Michael in the fourth quarter. He goes, Michael, who's open? And Michael didn't answer. Then he repeated himself. Michael, who's open? He goes, Pax. And he goes, give the ball to Pax. And Pax ended up scoring 10 or 12 points in the fourth quarter to clinch game five. They win their first championship. So, you know, I'm all for orchestrating championships. I think we could all use more of those.
How's your quarterback situation there, Sylvie?
I love it. Finally, I think I maybe have a quarterback that we can all love together. Like Cutler, Pippen is similar to Cutler. They're both as polarizing as they come. So, Jay, if you go in Chicago and you ask 100 people, did you love Cutler or did you hate Cutler? You're going to get a 50-50 split. Another one of these sports radio things that if we open up, the phone lines would go crazy. The only problem I have with Matt Nagy is he's not giving the opportunity of Justin Fields to win the job. I didn't like that he said, no, Justin Fields has no chance. I get it. It's hard. And maybe he can't win the job right away and that Andy Dalton is better from the start. But give the kid a chance to win it. And I think you're limiting yourself by saying he can't win the job.
Glad you're doing better. My best to Waddle there. And thanks for joining us.
You got it, Dan. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
And you're welcome for yesterday.
Thank you again. We've always appreciated it. The gift.
Yes. That's Mark Silverman, Sylvie and Waddle, ESPN 1000 in Chicago.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.